This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on property law. This is part two of our property law podcast, so please do listen to our part one. I am here today with Mr. Richard Power from Lamb Chambers in London. Richard is the head of his chambers and he is a senior property barrister who has advised and represented clients on a very high level in connection with disputes concerning trusts of land, proprietary estoppel, restrictive covenants, landlord and tenant disputes, and on leases and forfeitures, including cases in the leading Supreme Court decision on the assessment of beneficial interests in a property case on Jones versus Kernot. He has also written many articles and delivered a vast number of seminars and webinars. Thank you for joining us, Richard.
Good morning, Hattie.
Excellent. Right, so in part one, property law, we discussed five questions, and I'll quickly just mention what those questions were. My landlord wants to evict me and I've nowhere to go. What can I do? My landlord will not make repairs to the property. What are my rights? I have found a private landlord via an online advert and the landlord does not want to issue me with a tenancy agreement. Should I rent this property or room? I am thinking of buying a property with my partner and or friend. I will not be on the mortgage. What can I do to protect my interest in the property? And the last question that we covered was my neighbour and I are in a dispute over who owns the land in between our properties. How can I look into who actually owns the land? How can I look at resolving this matter without involving lawyers? So in our part two, Richard, we're going to look at some questions across the broader property law. We're going to try and cover some on landlord and tenant, some on property ownership and some on boundary disputes, because there's so many questions I'm sure that we can cover. So the first question that we've had sent in to us as one of the most frequently asked is, I want to let my property. Should I have a tenancy agreement in place, even if I know the tenant personally?
Well, the answer to that, the simple answer is yes, you should. As a matter of law, you can grant a tenancy an oral tenancy, but it's much safer to have it in writing. Even if you know the tenant personally, the risk is that if there's a dispute, you fall out and you're liable to lose, end up perhaps with litigation and lose the friend. The great advantage of having a written tenancy is that both sides know where they stand.
Yes, absolutely. And it can be referred to because people quickly forget what was agreed if there's nothing written down.
Absolutely.
In times when matters get contentious. So yes, absolutely do have a tenancy agreement in place. Great advice. The next question on landlord and tenant, Richard, is I have a tenant who is not paying their rent on time and or in full. What can I do to get them out of my property?
Well, there are two things. You can make an application to the court. You can serve Section 21 notice, which you may have heard of. If you haven't heard of it, there's plenty of information about it on the internet.
Yes.
Just Google Section 21 notice.
Yes.
And alternatively, you can go, if you want to claim the rent as well, you serve a different type of notice, a Section 8 notice. There's information on the internet about that too. But if you just want to get them out and you have an assured short-hold tenancy, the starting point is to serve a Section 21 notice.
Right. And obviously we're talking about people that don't have any landlord insurance in place. And they're literally doing this as a personal landlord trying to get somebody out.
Yes. There are pitfalls in letting property. And if you don't know what the pitfalls are, For example, you should have a gas safety certificate, an EPC,
yeah.
And you should also, or you have to, serve a document called How to Rent, which is available on the government website.
Yes.
Now, if you don't serve that, your Section 21 notice will be invalid. So you have to serve that. That tells...
At the time the tenancy begins.
Yes.
Yes.
That tells the tenant what his rights are. And as I say, if you do serve that, then everybody knows where they stand.
Where they stand. And obviously, if you do have... Homelet is one of the insurers that provide landlord insurance, then go to your insurers first, perhaps, and they may do that all for you.
If you've got an insurance policy, yes.
If you have. Many landlords, and I was looking at the statistics actually a few weeks ago, don't actually acknowledge the importance of having a landlord insurance in place, and it's not always that expensive to have.
I have to say, I don't know what the premiums are.
They're not bad. I mean, you know, I've known of premiums for rental incomes up to about £1,400-1,500 to be about £120-130 a year.
Right. I don't suppose for a moment that you can get insurance against non-payment of rent.
You can, actually. But they will have to do checks on the tenants and approve that the tenants can take the property.
Right.
So if the insurer says, we won't insure that individual because the credit history or the referencing from their previous landlords are not good enough,
yeah.
Then you can't have the insurance and then you make the decision as to whether you take the person on. But if the insurer says, yes, we're happy to insure that tenant, then they cover loss of rent to a certain amount, they cover legal expenses. So these are very important things, I think, and it's worth... every penny if you're in trouble.
Well, that takes the burden off the landlord. If they're not quite sure where they stand legally and procedurally on how to obtain possession, then it obviously makes sense,
yes,
to have a policy if you can afford it.
Yes, no, indeed, absolutely. Okay, so the next question I'm going to go on to, Richard, is... a tenant has moved out of my property and they have left it in a terrible state. The property requires repairs. Can I get the tenant to pay for the repairs required to put the property back in good order after they've moved on?
The answer to that question depends on two things. One, does the tenant have any money?
Yes.
Two, do you know where the tenant has gone?
Yes.
You can... sue the tenant for breach of covenant for repairs, and you would be entitled to damages, but it's going to cost a certain amount of money to take that case to court. And if the tenant has no money, you're not going to get any a judgment against someone with no money is not worth the paper it's written on.
Absolutely, and I think this is a very key point, isn't it? Because people say, oh, you know, I'll just go to a solicitor or I'll issue an online claim against a tenant that's moved on because I know where they are. But you're absolutely right. Does that tenant, your ex-tenant actually, have the means to pay? Because if they don't, you're throwing good money after bad.
You can. A judgment is you can enforce a judgment for 6 years. So... it depends whether you're prepared to wait. I mean, it's possible that your tenant may come into money in due course or may get an income or something, but you'd need to know where they are.
Yes.
And as I say, there's a lot of money up front to obtain a judgment in respect of breach of covenant to repair.
Yes, and if you are successful and they're good enough to honour a court order and pay on the back of it, then your quid's in. But if they escape even a court order that's made against them, as you say, it's not really worth the paper it's written on.
Quite.
Excellent. Okay, let's move on to property ownership. And I'm going to go to our first question there, which is quite a common one, actually, that we have had a lot of questions on, particularly on leaseholds. And the question is, I own a leasehold flat. Can I extend my lease? Does the freeholder have to allow me to extend my lease?
Well, a tenant does have a right to extend the lease. It's under the Leasehold Reform Housing and Urban Development Act 1993. if the landlord doesn't agree to extend your lease, and the quid pro quo is the tenant seeking to extend his lease will have to pay a premium to the landlord.
Yes.
And there's a formula for working out what that premium should be. If the landlord doesn't agree it, then you can go to court. The process is quite complicated, involving notices and counter notices and such like, and I suspect that the ordinary person in the street would need legal advice on how to do that.
Yes, and there's also expert sort of surveying estate agency companies that
yes.
advise on lease extensions.
There are the surveyors are experienced in working out what the premium should be.
Yes.
And
trying to negotiate for you, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Often you will have, you will instruct a surveyor and the landlord will instruct a surveyor, and they will negotiate between themselves and come up with a figure.
Yes.
And that's basically, if that happens, then you can short-circuit the court procedure, provided, of course, the landlord is prepared to go along
with
it.
Extend it, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a case recently where the managing agent of the property said, oh, we want X thousand pounds. And the client thought, well, that just seems a bit high. Let me get some help here. And actually, they ended up getting the value, what the managing agent required, plus the managing agent links it to what the ground rent's going to be going forward, which again was set almost treble what it currently was.
Yeah.
But because the client went and sought help from the right individuals, from a surveying company who were linked to the estate agents from a legal body, they managed to actually get zero peppercorn ground rent, which is almost zero.
Yeah.
The price was reduced by about 35%.
Yes.
So don't, I guess, always take what the managing agent is saying as gospel, because they work for the freeholder, don't
you
they?
You definitely need advice on what the premium should be.
Yes, I'd
because
say.
Because the landlord, he can pick a figure, and merely because the landlord says that this is what he wants.
Yes.
What he wants. It doesn't mean that that is what he's going to get.
And particularly with the ground rent, Richard, because if your ground rent is very, very high, because you're going to have more than likely service charge as well linked to the property, you could find it difficult to sell that property, because ground rents and service charges are something that purchasers look at.
Yes, but I mean, the ground rent and the service charges, after you've extended your lease, they're not going to change.
No.
They're going to remain what they were before.
Yes.
The question is whether is the value of the premium essentially.
Yes.
So if you've got high service charges anyway.
Oh yes, that is what it is. But in this instance, the managing agent tried to treble the ground rent
right.
at the time they were doing trying to quote a lease extension figure,
right.
which we found very strange.
I'd be surprised if you could get away with that.
Well, they didn't in the end, because the client went to the right sources and sought the right advice.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, and it does become a bit of a minefield once you start chipping into it.
Yeah.
So, okay, the next question is, what are the benefits of owning a flat as a share of freehold as opposed to a straightforward lease?
Well, there's a certain amount of argument as to whether there is a significant difference. I mean, chiefly because you own a share of the freehold, you have a say in how the freehold is managed. So, for example, if you're in a block of flats of 350, and if 350 flats, and each tenant has a share of the freehold, you're one of 350 people who may have a say, and so it's difficult to say precisely what advantage there is, but it does give you a say. That's the
yes.
chief advantage, as far as I can see.
And also, probably, I would say in the value of the property, it has a better value.
You're on the property ladder.
Yes.
And if the...
As a share of freehold.
Yep.
Not that you don't have a value as a leasehold. Obviously,
absolutely.
The number of years on the lease will matter greatly.
Yep.
But if you're selling or remortgaging a share of freehold flat, it does have a slightly higher value in most cases than just a straightforward leasehold.
And if anyone wants to extend their leases, it may may come into play as well.
Yes.
Because you're on both sides of the argument then.
Yes, no,
both
indeed.
As landlord and tenant.
But then I think it's important to realise that if you're going for a share of freehold to extend your lease, because you still have the lease, don't you? And this is what can be quite confusing, to 999 years.
Yes. The thing you've got to remember is that there are obligations on both sides. Merely because you have a say, merely because you own a share of the freehold, doesn't mean to say that you don't have to honour the obligations in the lease. You still have to do that.
Yes.
You still have to pay whatever service charges and
yes.
maintain the property and that sort of thing. And likewise, as landlord, you have obligations too, or a share of the obligations.
Yes. No, indeed. Okay, so I'm going to do one more question on property ownership, and then let's try and get a couple of questions in for boundary disputes. What can I do if my lease is below 60 years remaining and the freeholder will not extend the lease? They say, no, not going to extend it. You're trying to remortgage. Your mortgage company is saying, sorry, we don't offer mortgages to properties with less than 60 years. Some of them are less than 70
yeah.
or 80 now.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, I think to a certain extent, we've touched on this earlier, you can, if the freeholder is not prepared to extend the lease, you can make an application under the Leasehold Reform Housing and Urban Development Act to extend the lease. And as I say, you will have to pay a premium and you will have discussions on your behalf between surveyors to work out what the appropriate premium will be.
So the landlord would have to extend it, is that what we're saying? The freeholder will have to extend it, they will have no choice?
You can apply to the court. And it's
up to the court to decide,
yes.
you're saying,
yeah.
right? So if the court decides actually in this circumstance it's okay for the freeholder to say, no, we're not extending the lease, then that could happen.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And tribunals, there's tribunals
yes.
that assist.
Yes, first-tier property tribunals deal with this sort of thing. They are, you have the High Court, the County Court, and various first-tier tribunals which deal which have jurisdiction to deal with matters in which they have particular expertise, and the property tribunal would deal with this sort of thing.
Yes, yes, but it could be the case that the freeholder does get a judgment or a tribunal decision in their favour saying, yes, you don't have to extend. That could happen. Interesting.
Yes, I'd have to think about that.
Yes, yes. I mean, I
rather doubt it, because if they've determined the premium, I'd have to look at the grounds on which...
On which that's specific to that case.
Yes,
yes. No,
yeah.
I mean, I remember, we've not had a case on that basis, but I remember a few years ago reading about a lady who had to give up her property because her freeholder said, lease came to an end, freeholder said, not interested in renewing it anymore, took the property from under her feet. But I don't remember the specifics
right.
and how
okay.
and what it was. But, okay, let's get on to boundary disputes, which is actually a huge area of concern in terms of legal disputes in the UK. But let's start by explaining what is actually a boundary dispute. What do we mean by that?
Well, a boundary dispute is a dispute as to where the boundary between two properties is. Land law is hundreds of years old in this country, and
that a good thing?
Well, it means that land law is, in some respects, very archaic. When you register land at the land registry, you put in a plan of the land you're registering.
Or your legal representative.
Or your conveyancer or solicitor will do
yeah.
it.
Yes.
But in many cases, the boundary identified on the plan is for identification purposes only. In other words, it does not delineate the actual boundary.
Which is extraordinary in itself, I think, Richard, because these plans are provided to you as part of your conveyancing file.
Yes.
And you see, more often than not, the red line that goes around this property,
yes.
this space. But that doesn't, what we're saying is that doesn't always mean that that's definitively...
No, it doesn't.
...your land.
No, I mean, there can be mistakes on there, and... You know, somebody may have built an extension to their property 15 years ago, shifted the fence a bit, and no one did anything about it.
And they might have a plan that says that that's their bit of land.
They may do.
They've got one that says it's yours.
They may do, but I mean, quite possible that they've simply shifted the fence in an area you hadn't seen, and or maybe it happened 25 years ago.
Yes. Or maybe two neighbours agreed that could happen at the time, and then the properties get sold on.
Quite so. And the information wasn't passed on. There's any number of possibilities for these things. I have to say, though, when talking about boundary disputes, it's very often the case that the costs of litigating the boundary dispute is exceed by a huge margin the value of the land concerned.
It's being disputed,
so
yes.
You do not want to pursue a boundary dispute lightly. It's
yes.
going to cost a lot of money,
yes.
and the courts have said over and over again that they've come across cases of spending £50,000 in litigation costs
and the land's over about
a patch of land a few square metres.
Yes.
Just not worth it.
Yes, yes. But then who gives in? That's the problem.
Well,
there are
good ways of resolving disputes nowadays. Mediation is very popular
yes.
in a lot of disputes, and that is much, much cheaper than litigation. What you'd need in a boundary dispute over a relatively small piece of land, it would be far more sensible for both sides to
engage in mediation.
It would.
Yeah.
Because the legal costs can grow exponentially.
You think
a letter from a solicitor might persuade the other side to back off, but
it won't always be the case,
and they will come back thinking the same thing.
Yes.
And then you have a full blown dispute within a very short period
of
time.
I've seen disputes where somebody has said, right, I'm not now right of way boundary disputes,
yeah.
where someone says, right, I'm not going to let you drive on my land to get to your home.
Yes.
And they are quite serious boundary
yes.
disputes. You know, although you're not saying you own that land, you access your land through that land. And
yes.
that they are quite common, actually.
Disputes over rights of way, again, as I say, land law is very old in this country, and many aspects of it are very archaic.
Isn't all the areas of law, Richard? I'm trying to find a new area of law,
yeah,
actually. Well,
yeah.
there are, you know.
But disputes over rights of way, they can cost a fortune as
yes.
well.
Yes. But in those cases, in those instances, people don't really have the choice. But then you say mediation, you know, great...
Yes, I do.
Great way forward, great option.
I do. I mean, it's not possible in every case, obviously. And if you need access to a piece of land, it may be worth a great deal of money to you. So
yes.
You may have to litigate it. Quite.
You know, that's quite a serious thing. Okay, I'm going to end it with one last question.
Right.
Amongst our long list of questions. And this one's quite interesting because we actually had a case like this very recently. And it says, I'm not on good terms with my neighbour and I would like to build on my property. When I ask for planning permission from my local council, will my neighbour have to agree in order for me to carry out my building work?
Well, the answer to that...
Party walls.
Yeah, party wall. The answer to that is it's not a question of planning permission. If you're going to build up to your boundary and... if you're going to build, you're probably going to dig a trench or something like that. And there's a risk of your undermining your neighbour's building or structure. So there is an act, the Party Wall Act 1996, which provides a mechanism for resolving any difficulties that may exist or that may arise between the parties. If... you can either agree to the plans. It would be sensible.
You've got this neighbour that's saying, "I don't like you.
Yeah.
I'm not agreeing to anything."
Right. Okay, in that case, you appoint a party wall surveyor.
Here we go. Surveyors are busy people in this
they
in
are.
This world.
They are, And your difficult neighbour also has a right to appoint a surveyor. The two surveyors will talk about what is needed to be done between themselves, quite apart from...
That's very helpful, isn't it? Because that can help diffuse what's going on. But again, I'm going to take this one step further. If your neighbour says, I'm not interested, I'm not appointing a surveyor, I'm not having a conversation, I'm not agreeable for you to do anything. That's it.
Well, the troublesome neighbour cannot stop you building on your land.
Right.
This is why the Party Wall Act has this mechanism in place. So if he's going to be really difficult, a party wall surveyor may be appointed to act for him.
Right.
The party wall surveyors are in a sort of, they have a quasi-judicial role because they are independent of the people who instruct them.
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah, so they can decide things which they think are for the general good of both neighbours without referring to the people who instruct them.
Right, well that's very interesting, isn't it?
It's called an award. Oh. Under the Party Wall Act.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, that's very interesting because people do assume that if you've got a difficult neighbour, they'll never allow you to build the extension or never allow you to do things. And obviously dealing with the council, your local council, and getting your proper permissions and plans and the building regs and all of that is separate.
Yeah.
But basically what we're saying is, at the end of the day, if you've got all that together, you've got all your permissions and everything together, your neighbour can't be the reason why you don't proceed.
If you've got planning permission, a troublesome neighbour cannot stop you building on your land.
Excellent. Well, Richard, this has been really informative. We've literally just scratched the surface again on property law. And I do want to, obviously, in our further podcast, go deeper and give more information. So don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.